Hello out there in Radioland. This is Chuck Shaden with Recollections at 50. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as we tune in to a few nostalgic moments from a half century of Those Were the Days programs. In February of 1994, our program decided to celebrate the 61st anniversary of Jack Benny's 39th birthday. A big party was scheduled, and hundreds of our listeners joined us in the Preston Bradley Hall of the Chicago Cultural Center. In for the occasion were Jack Benny's daughter, Joan Benny, and her son, Jack's grandson, Bobby Blumoff. They would appear, along with members of our Those Were the Days radio players, in a special presentation honoring Mr. Benny's centennial birthday. As the festivities got underway, I spent a few minutes talking with Joan and Bobby about Jack.
Joan, your father was 39.
Forever.
Forever, right?
Yes.
Did he talk much about his age when you were a girl?
He didn't talk about it a lot, but he cared about it a lot.
Uh-huh.
And there were signs of that all the way along. I remember his very last birthday was his 80th. And, you know, despite what happened afterwards, sadly, he hated being 80 years old. He hated being 70 years old. He really didn't like growing older. I mean, that's a very that was serious to him.
Uh-huh.
That was not humor. He didn't like growing older.
Now, Bobby, you were just about 10 years old, weren't you, when you lost your grandfather?
Yeah, that's right.
What does any recollections of him that you have would have to be very early recollections for you?
Yeah.
How did you relate to him? How did he relate to you as a grandfather grandson?
Well, I think the biggest thing was we were big baseball fans, both mm-hmm. of us, and so he used to take me to baseball games. That's probably my biggest recollection is that, and he would play Happy Birthday on the violin on my birthdays.
Oh. That was my wow, that's
what I remember.
Did he play well?
Well, you know, to this day, you know, my idea of good music is the Grateful Dead, so I can't.
Bobby, you're a graduate student at MIT, right?
That's right.
And we were happy to find out that he was on his way from Cambridge to Santa Fe, and he switched his plans so that he could stop over a couple of days in Chicago to be with us for this occasion. And Joan, you came to us from, you were going to come from New York. You have a place in New York, and you also have a place in Beverly Hills, right? And you decided not to go back to New York because of the weather, right?
It wasn't my decision. It was American Airlines' decision. I couldn't get back to New York. As a matter of fact, the amusing part of it was that I had to come from California. And I had absolutely nothing to wear because everything warm I own is in my New York apartment. I didn't own a pair of gloves, a fur hat, a heavy coat. I had to borrow. These aren't borrowed, but all my heavy clothes, everything is borrowed for this trip.
Well, we have a concession for rental if you need something.
You'd be surprised.
You take up a collection here.
You lived with your parents in Beverly Hills in a home, a famous home because it was always used in his radio and TV work on Roxbury.
I don't know that it was ever used professionally. You have the picture of it.
I don't mean of, they didn't, he referred to it. He referred to his home on Roxbury, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that house?
Oh, that's hard to describe. It's where I grew up. It's hard to even drive past it today. It has such mm-hmm. wonderful memories. I finally got up the courage. It's been recently sold, and I noticed as I was driving, because to get to my house from wherever I happen to be, I have to drive right past it. It's just on the route home. And so it's hard to avoid. And I saw all the workmen's trucks and whatever, so I thought, well, I'm going to go look. I wonder if the octopus, I don't know who here has read the book and remembers the octopus in the pool. You know, I wonder if the octopus is still in the pool. I wonder if the rooms are still in the same place. And the builder was there, and it was kind of, the back end was kind of torn apart. Anyway, he let me go in. And it was amazing. My father used to write the radio shows in the library. I think I talked about that in the book, too, and how I used to love when I was a little girl to come home from school and go in the library with my milk and cookies and listen to the four writers and my father and the secretary working on next Sunday's show. And, of course, that room particularly holds great memories for me. And, amazingly, that room was totally unchanged, exactly the way it used to be, even the Delft tiles around the fireplace. And that brought tears to my eyes. the rest of the house is quite different, but everything's in the same place, so it was very nostalgic to go through it again. As I said, the memories of... When I first started the book, I really wanted to do the book as memories of the house and recall things as I went from room to room. Mm-hmm. And my editor didn't like the idea, so I did something else. But I still think of it that way, like the great New Year's Eve parties that they had when I was a little girl with every movie star. I mean, those were the days when Hollywood was Hollywood and movie stars were movie stars. And every New Year's Eve, they'd tent over the backyard, and I used to hide on the upper stairwell and kind of look down so I could see people coming in. And there were the Gary Coopers and the Jimmy Stewarts and Claudette Colbert and Barbara Stanwyck and Joan Crawford. I mean, every movie star you can think of were at these New Year's Eve parties. And then, and this would be on the patio outside, which was tented. Then after dinner and dancing, late night, everybody would kind of gather in our quite large living room with the piano at the end, a very beautiful Steinway B. And then the entertainment would start, and I guess it's what you all would call home entertainment, what people do. Somebody sits down at the piano, somebody sings a song. Only, of course, in this case, it was Judy Garland and Frank Sinatra singing, you know, and George Burns telling jokes and Danny Kaye doing a routine, or way back, Al Jolson even would be over, or Groucho Marx, or, I mean, just on. And that was Dinah Shore, Tony Martin. I mean, that was our version of home entertainment. I look back on it now and I think, did I dream that? You know, was I really there?
How does it feel to have a father and a mother as well who were constantly being noticed everywhere they went? Were you aware of their celebrity, or were they just parents who had a job?
Oh, no, of course I was aware of their celebrity, but it was sort of, that was simply a fact of life. Those were my parents. But I grew up in a milieu where most of my friends had famous parents, so I certainly didn't feel any different from anyone else. I grew up with Gary Cooper's daughter and Joan Bennett's daughter and Loretta Young's daughter and George Burns's daughter, so it wasn't particularly unusual. I thought everybody did, you know? Everybody's parents signed autographs.
Bobby, when you went to the ball game with your grandfather, did he must have been stopped from time to time for autographs, things of that nature?
Well, that was certainly when I first realized that there was something special, because when I was very young, it occurred first, seemed like a strange thing that people would be asking him for autographs, and then for some reason there was a transition where it seemed so normal that I always just figured that someday I would be famous. It was just sort of a natural progression. Well, and here I am, right? But it didn't occur to me that I would have to do something on my own, maybe, to be famous. It was just sort of a natural thing. And, of course, when I became famous, people, too, would ask me for my autograph. So that afternoon, I came home from the baseball game and spent a few hours in my room practicing my autograph. So to this day, I can sign my autograph in about 1/10 of a second. And if you've ever seen it, it looks like a doctor's. So I've lived with that.
May I tell this? I have a wonderful story about Bobby. Can I? Yes, of course I can.
Okay.
I'm your mother, I can tell. It frequently, you know, one is asked about being famous, being the child of somebody famous. And I guess Bobby was about 6 or 7 years old, no more than that. And his little sister, Joanna, is a year younger. And we were someplace with my father, I don't recall where, a restaurant perhaps. And the maitre d' had made a big fuss over him. And we're walking along, and I have one kid in each hand, and Bobby looks up at me, and he says, "Mommy, is Granddaddy famous?" I said, "Yes, honey, Granddaddy's famous." There's a pause. "Are we famous?" I said, "No, honey, you're not famous." Pause. He said, "Well, we're pretty well known for our age."
Good timing, yeah. Too.
Yeah. That was probably true then.
What did you do as a family, Joan, you and your mother and dad?
Well, we're talking about before the grandchildren
came. Before the
came.
Grandchildren, yeah.
Mostly, well, I can think of things with my father, like Bobby took over the baseball because my mother didn't like baseball, so I was the one taken to baseball games, subsequently became a great fan, and of course later it was my older son Michael and Bobby who went to the baseball games. That was something we did together. They generally took me with them when they traveled, particularly when they went to New York to do shows, so we were together then. We had a lot of dinners together. As I said, we traveled together. Later when I grew up, I finally took up golf. which I did in self-defense, because that was, you know, you think of the dinner conversation, the glamorous dinner conversation of growing up in Hollywood. Well, our dinner conversation was frequently, my mother would say, well, you know, I sliced on the first hole, and then, you know, and then my father is saying, well, I was in the sand trap on the second hole. They would go through 18 holes of golf. I mean, it was a wonderful dinner conversation. Anyway, I finally took up golf as self-defense, and then, of course, I played golf with them. So we did a lot together, with a couple of recollections.
Now, your brother is, his name is?
Michael.
Michael, and he's a little older?
Yeah, he's quite a bit older, actually. He's a doctor in Los Angeles, medical doctor.
Okay, and you are a graduate student at MIT?
That's right, so I too will be a doctor.
That's right, and you will be studying what?
Are
you
computer science.
Computer science?
Yes, I'm the family geek.
My wife wants to talk to you after the show here, because she's got some computer
What's wrong with the PC
questions.
At home.
Yeah, right. Well, you folks have a relationship that is very unique. You are related to a man who is beloved by millions, who was beloved by millions during his lifetime. And as you can see today, this is really a small segment of the people who really have a great respect and love for him. And I know before we got together up here on the stage, you each had a chance to visit with some of the folks out here, and I hope some of that love came across to you.
Yes, it's a wonderful feeling. I'm very proud. You know,
we're real delighted that you could be with us this afternoon.
Wonderful thing.
Joan and I had talked some time ago about her coming for this special event. She was here when we opened the Jack Benny Vault exhibit down in our Radio Hall of Fame, and that was a sensational afternoon. We had a wonderful time. Writer George Balzer came in on that, too, and we got Bobby to walk into the vault this afternoon too before the show here, and it means a lot to us to have you both here. We asked Joan if she would come for this birthday party and if she would play the role of her mother, Mary Livingston, in our recreation, and she said, "Gee, I've never done that before." But did you not do a little bit of work on the radio show when, at a time near the end, your mother didn't want to? She had a little stage fright.
Yeah, well, my mother developed stage fright gradually over the years, to the point where by the last few years of radio, she really could barely get out of bed to get to the studio. She was absolutely scared to death. And the last year, she arranged, she cajoled my father into working it out that, and by then the electronics or whatever were sophisticated enough to do this, where she actually recorded her part at home. And so what you heard over the radio was her voice, but she was too frightened to go to the studio. So when it was done for the studio audience, like we're going to do it now, I did it for her. I played her part. But, of course, that's not what you heard when it went out over the radio. I don't even know how they did that electronically.
Unusually today, what we're going to do is when you get up to the microphone and you're going to say your words, we're going to electronically edit you out.
Right.
Dub in your mother's voice again.
Yes.
No, not you.
I don't sound at all like her, so you will have to use your imagination.
In rehearsal, she does a nice job, and you'll see in just a couple of minutes. And then when we found that Bobby was going to stop in for us, which was before we had our program printed up, we said, gee, maybe we can get a role for you. Have you ever done any acting?
No.
Have you ever done any public speaking?
Only technical.
Well, today you're going to get your chance. This may be the thing that gets you to be really famous.
Well, there you go. This could be it.
We've written it. Ken Alexander, who wrote our script, has written in a real a nice scene for Bobby to play in our recreation. Are you up for it now?
You bet.
Okay. Well, actually, I actually appreciate you having me here to do this. I wanted to thank you, Chuck, for doing this, because normally I'm just plain old me, but for a day I get to be Jack Benny's grandson, and I'm very happy to be Jack Benny's grandson. So thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Bobby.
And we were very happy that Joan Benny and Bobby Blumoff, Jack's daughter and his grandson, could be with us for the 61st anniversary of Mr. Benny's 39th birthday. That was on February 13, 1994. Much of that special occasion would be broadcast a few months later on our Those Were the Days program of April 30, 1994, which happened to be our 24th anniversary program. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Recollections at 50s. There's more to come in the weeks to come. This is Chuck Shaden. Thanks for listening.